This is the Beautiful Feet Podcast, a partnership with BeautifulFeetEntertainment.com. Follow us on social media at Beautiful Feet Entertainment and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Beautiful Feet Podcast. My name's Anthony.
And I'm Jessica.
And we've been partnering up with the Wrestling with Faith Podcast, where we're talking about, on our end, we're talking about the Book of Esther. We've gone through the first, four chapters? Yeah, the first four chapters. This week we're talking about, five and six.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So, as we've always said, don't take our word for it. Read for yourself. Study for yourself. We're simply doing an overview of each chapter. We're not going as in-depth as you could go. We're literally doing an overview. So, would you like to do a very brief overview of 1 through 4?
Okay, so here's what's happened.
Cliff note time.
Here's what has happened so far. We're in Persia, in the ancient world. King Xerxes was married to Queen Vashti, but because she refused to appear at a banquet he was giving, she was banished, and he was looking for a new queen. So Esther fit that bill after a year of beauty treatments, and Esther became queen. Now, Esther's ancestry was that she has Jewish heritage, and she was taken in by her cousin Mordecai after her parents had died. Mordecai had urged her not to tell King Xerxes about her Jewish ancestry. So now, Mordecai, because he was a Jewish person, the religion that he followed would not allow him to worship any other gods or people that felt that they needed to be worshipped. So King Xerxes had a second in command named Haman, and Haman wanted Mordecai to worship him, but Mordecai refused. So Haman set about to plot to kill all the Jews throughout King Xerxes' empire. For 3 days, the Jews and Esther and her handmaidens fasted. And now, that brings us to the opening of chapter 5, where Esther is going to go before the king without being summoned, which, if he does not extend the royal scepter to her, could basically be the end of her story.
Yes. All right, let's go through, chapter 5. So, it starts off in a dark hallway. No. Basically, she's approaching the king, right?
Yes.
So that's where we're starting off. And there's this tension of, again, is he going to extend his scepter? Is he going to accept what it is she's trying to do, right?
Well, because when King Xerxes was in the inner court, it was basically by invitation only. If he was in the outer court or other parts of the palace, then it was a different scenario. But this is more of his personal space.
It's his man cave.
Essentially, yes.
Yes. So she goes in, and without even saying anything, he extends his scepter.
So that means that she has been granted access to be able to be there with him.
Yeah. And he basically states it as, hey, what's on your mind? Anything you want, I'll do for you, type of a deal.
Well, she had pointed out to him, hey, I've come here to petition before you. I have a request. And he's pretty much letting her know that anything you want, even up to half of my kingdom, I will grant it to you. I will give it to you. He wants to be able to grant the request that she's bringing to him.
Mm-hmm. So what happens after that? We have he accepts her request, or he accepts to listen to her request.
Now remember, Mordecai told Esther, well, everyone in the kingdom knew that Haman was plotting to exterminate the Jews. And Mordecai had told Esther not to reveal her Jewish heritage. So this is Esther's request. Esther entreats King Xerxes that she would be given permission to hold a special banquet with herself, King Xerxes, and Haman as the only people in attendance.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so she's trying to set up this meal. It doesn't exactly say why, but with the context, we kind of get this idea that she's probably trying to bring peace amongst, you know, does that make sense?
I feel like it, to me, seems almost like a reconnaissance mission. Like, she's going to go in there, she's going to be able to have this, what essentially would be a one-on-one with Haman, just to kind of gather some intel about this person that's a threat to her life and the life of her people.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. Haman is a very egotistical person. So when he gets the news that he has been invited to dine with the king and queen, he is over the moon about it.
Well, because he thinks he's getting some kind of recognition for what he thinks is great work.
Because he's already got this wonderful promotion. But then he sees that Mordecai still won't acquiesce to him.
Yeah.
And that just makes him upset.
Yeah.
So, after Esther goes to King Xerxes and they set up this banquet, the king is wide awake, like in the middle of the night. He is having trouble sleeping. And so, as you do when you're royalty during this time, he decides to basically read my life story, the chronicles of his reign.
Okay. First of all, he doesn't read it. He has someone read it to him.
Yes.
Probably because he's illiterate and can't read. But I don't know about any of you guys. When I can't sleep, last night being one of those nights, when I can't sleep, I don't open a book about my life. I already know my life. I don't need to read it or have it read to me. That is the most egotistical thing I've ever heard of. That's fantastic.
Well, and the passage that is read to him chronicles the two men that we heard about earlier who had plotted to assassinate him. But Mordecai had uncovered the plot, so the king asked this follow-up question, which you think he would have known about, because, I mean, hello, this is your life.
He was there.
But he was like, so, for this Mordecai fellow, like, did he get any special rewards? Like, how was he treated? How did that pan out? Like, was he acknowledged for his efforts? And the servant was like, no.
Yeah, he's being threatened to be killed.
So this gives the king something to think about. This individual who has saved his life needs to be rewarded. And at this time, Haman is coming to go into the court. And so the king is like, hey, Haman, how would you give honor to someone you feel that the king thinks really deserves it? And Haman is thinking like, oh yeah, this is going to be about me. So let me describe what I would really like to have.
And is this isn't at the banquet, right? This is
before the banquet has been held.
Yeah.
This is the night before the banquet. So Haman's like, okay, well, you know, since you're asking for my humble opinion, I think you should
Blinky.
Yeah, exactly. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. You should give them a robe that the king has worn. You should give them the horse that the king has rode. You should have them, go, like, people go before them in the city streets and say, this is basically what happens when you please the king. This is how he will honor you. Again, Haman is thinking that this is what's going to happen to him.
And that's my favorite part, right? My favorite part is this dude is so big-headed that he can't ponder. He can't even acknowledge the fact that this could be for someone else. He's like, man, the king is about to honor me in the greatest sort of way because of the amazing work I'm doing with the Jewish people, threatening to kill them, basically. Like, and spoiler, like, it's not for him. So
after Haman admits to the king, oh yeah, this would be a great way to honor someone, King Xerxes is like, oh, go and do that to Mordecai. So Haman has to be the one to give Mordecai the king's robe and the king's horse and go before Mordecai
and all the king's men
in the city. And this is just adding fuel to the fire that Haman has within him of like, I don't like Mordecai. I already didn't like him. Now I don't like him even more than I did before.
Yeah, so Haman is definitely big-headed. He definitely only thinks about himself. Like, at no point in time do we see him, or King Xerxes for that matter, think about anyone but themselves.
So after this incident, Haman goes home. He gathers his friends. He gathers his wife. And he tells them all about it. Like, he is literally giving the epitome of a pity party to get all of his friends together to tell them how unfair it is that instead of him getting these honors, they went to Mordecai. But here's his friends and wife's response. Yeah, I know you're upset about this, but literally, tomorrow, you get to have a banquet with the king and queen, so why don't you just go to bed and forget about it, and then tomorrow you'll wake up and you'll have your banquet.
Yeah.
Not a lot of sympathetic responses from his family and friends. See, I feel like, from their perspective, this probably happens all the time. Haman comes to them, he complains about how unfair his life is, and they just have to be like, dude, you're second in command. Like, you got a pretty cushy job here.
Yeah. So, I was gonna say, like, let's put ourselves in their shoes, right? It would be like someone from our family, right, being so about themselves where all they do is whine and complain. And you're like, dude, first of all, you have a meeting with the king tomorrow. You don't know what it's about. You don't know what he wants to discuss. Like, there might be something great happening already, but you're mad because it hasn't happened yet. Like, it's conceited. It's big-headed. It's, and at no point in time, again, this is a very condensed book. It's a very, you know, here's the point type of book. Like, but we don't get a sense that he ever talks about them, right? He's not asking them, what's going on? What are you upset about? It's all about him.
Well, and now, like, because this is 5 and 6, we still have 7, 8, 9, and 10. Like, there's still a lot more content to unpack before we get to the end of the story.
And I'm looking at the title, and I'm not going to give the title away, but at the beginning of each chapter, there's typically a title. Based on the translation you're using, the title is different. Ours does not look well for Haman.
Well, and here's the thing. A lot has happened in this one day.
Yeah. This is like West Side Story. It all happens in a few days.
Haman fueled, like, because of the fuel that is his hatred for Mordecai, he literally goes and he builds, I guess what we would think of as, like, a gallows.
Exactly.
For the express purpose of, yep, this is where I want to see this person who is very much annoying me. And I feel like we're going to pick up more on that with chapter 7.
Can we talk about what a gallows is for anyone who may not know?
So, you know the game Hangman? Where you draw, like, the little stand and the noose and everything? That's what a gallows is. But, like, in your translation, it literally talks about, hey, I want to put this guy's head on a pike. Like, I want him to be impaled.
Yeah.
This is definitely a PG-13 story, guys.
PG-13? This is Gorefest 2022.
This is gross. Is this gross. Like an R-rated movie?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that is the depth and intensity of Haman's hatred and angst for Mordecai, is that he has this death contraption constructed.
For a dude who's done nothing wrong, except, hey, I don't want to worship you as a god because you're not a god. That's it. That's all he's done. And he's done nothing wrong.
If it were me, like, weird thing to think about. If I were Haman and I learned that Mordecai had saved the king from an assassination attempt, I would be like, thank you, my dude. You saved my boss.
I would be honoring him. Right? Like, one, because if he said he saved, Mordecai saved him from, like, multiple people, or was it just one?
There were two assassins.
Okay, so this dude fought off two assassins. Assassins are trained
to kill. He didn't fight them off, he just exposed the fact that that was their plan.
Oh, okay, sorry, I misheard. But this dude, like, was able to protect the king in this way. And so you're like, I don't want to mess with this dude. I have a feeling that Mordecai... Why do I feel like Mordecai is like a humble dude but can fight?
Well, and think of it from this perspective. Haman's entire status within the kingdom and the community is based on the fact that he has such high regard in King Xerxes' kingdom. If there's no King Xerxes, then Haman's not going to be important anymore because the new king probably would bring his own advisors with him.
Yeah. So, this is a dramatic movie. Like, I know we're reading the Bible, but, like, if this were a movie, this would be some dramatic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You got people wanting to impale people. You got the king reading his own biography, which is, like, the funniest thing. I can't get over that. Like, I'm sorry, if I can't sleep, I'm not reading my own biography. Anyway, any other details about this book that we need to know about?
Well, and again, I think it is important to note that Esther's got a plan behind this feast. So... her motivation for giving this private banquet, that's what we're going to be finding out within the next few chapters, because it sounds like, so remember how it was like, hey, King Xerxes has not asked for Esther in a month?
Yeah.
She doesn't really get to hang out with him or be with him unless he asks for her. So I would think, you know, again, if I were Esther and I hadn't seen my husband in a month, I don't know if I'd want to be like, yeah, let's throw a banquet with this other person that is your coworker.
Yeah, your second in command.
They would want, like, some couple time. I don't know.
Oh, it doesn't sound like couple time happens unless the king wants couple time.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he's got a couple other people before he gets to her for couple time. Which is super sad.
Yeah. Well, again, King Xerxes is not someone who would ascribe to this conventional topic that we think of as marriage. It was very common in the ancient world, especially for someone who had the wealth, status, and prestige that he did, to have maybe multiple wives, concubines, all sorts of
side chicks.
Yes.
Well, and this is one of those things, right? So this is one of those details that seems to pop up whenever people want to, like, have multiple partners, have multiple wives, is, well, the Bible talks about it, therefore it's okay. This is another one of those examples where the Bible's mentioning it, but not condoning it. Mentioning it from the standpoint of, yes, this happened historically, and it's been known to happen historically. That does not mean it's approved by God, or does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I think people like to, oh, well, this person had multiple partners and they were considered a godly person. I can too. That doesn't mean what they were doing was wrong or wasn't wrong. It's definitely wrong. It's not approved of. Historically, that's just what they did. And let's be honest, there are people who still try to do this now.
Well, and
it's not as common, but
the world that we live in is a very vast place, and there are people who ascribe to all sorts of thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and that's just not concerning romantic relationships. But polyamory, I feel like for polyamory to work, you would have to have the agreement of everyone involved that, okay, I'm going to date this person and this person.
Yeah.
And for some people, it works. But I think what Anthony is trying to say is that monogamy, so having one person, having one partner, is really the example that the majority of Christians are going to be following as their concept for what a relationship looks like.
Yeah.
I can't actually think of an instance where you could have Christians and polyamory, except for the fundamentalist Latter-day Saints. Not all Mormons or members of the Latter-day Saints Church subscribe to polyamory, but the fundamentalists do. And we've seen that that has not always worked out well in their favor.
Well, no, because it's essentially, we're not going to be on this topic long, but essentially it's the men can have multiple husbands, but the women have to have one. No, the men could have multiple wives. The women have to have one husband.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very patriarchal, like, men reign supreme type of thought process. And yeah, it's just, and the math doesn't make sense. Because if you're with multiple women, like, and they're only with one dude, like, I don't know. It just doesn't mathematically makes sense. But anyway, we took a tangent.
We did. We took a very interesting tangent here.
Well, I just know that, like, one of the things about the Bible is people take these type of verses where it talks about people having multiple partners as a way of, okay, well, if that's true, I could be a Christian and still do this, even though, you see what I'm saying? Like, trying to have the cake and eat it too, so to speak.
Well, and we have to remember that King Xerxes, being the king of Persia, he's not going to subscribe to the Jewish religion.
Yeah.
And, again, a fact to keep in mind, he doesn't know that his queen is Jewish.
No. He thinks she's, does it ever say what he thinks she is?
I don't know.
It just says that she's not, don't tell him when you're Jewish. It doesn't specify, that I remember, what her nationality is supposed to be. But I'm assuming probably Persian or something of that nature.
So for next week, on the Beautiful Feet podcast, we will be taking a look at Esther chapters 7 and 8.
Oh, yes.
And then we will get to unveil and reveal that spoiler alert of what the title of chapter 7 is and how it doesn't look good for our friend Haman.
True. Now, like we had said, we're partnering up with the Wrestling with Faith podcast. So, because we're going over the Book of Esther, we are talking about women in wrestling. We started with Stephanie McMahon. We've talked about Miss Elizabeth. This week, I'm actually going with one of my favorites, Lita.
Okay.
Now, I don't think you know anything about Lita.
I do not. But again, that's a part of why the Wrestling with Faith podcast is probably so entertaining for our listeners, because you know a lot about wrestling and I really don't.
Yeah. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. We are blending these two episodes together. So we're going to take a quick commercial break and then we're going to go ahead and jump into the Wrestling with Faith portion, where we are going to be talking about the life and career of Lita. So we'll be right back with the Wrestling with Faith podcast.
Inspired by hip-hop and the faith culture, The Sanctuary in My Solitude, The Thoughts, Feelings, and Life Lessons of an Imperfect Christian by Anthony Giesick is BeautifulFeetEntertainment.com's work in print. It is a book of poetry, and it's available through iUniverse.com, Amazon.com, BeautifulFeetEntertainment.com, and the links are also available in our social media and podcast. So please consider The Sanctuary of My Solitude if you're looking for a next great read. Thank you so much.
Welcome to Wrestling with Faith. My name's Anthony.
And I'm Jessica.
And we've been partnering up with the Beautiful Feet podcast almost to talk about, like,
there's dead air. You gotta find some words.
We're talking about the Book of Esther on the Beautiful Feet podcast. So we decided to partner and talk about women of wrestling in the Wrestling with Faith podcast.
There you go.
I know words. I speaketh the English sometimes. Now, on the Beautiful Feet side of this podcast, because we've actually been morphing them together into one episode, really just to kind of make it easier, but also to kind of get everyone on the same page, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yes. We know that the Beautiful Feet podcast is our pre-existing listening base, and that we're trying to launch Wrestling with Faith. So having the two episodes together allows the people who are already listening to us on Mondays anyway to have a chance to listen to both podcasts at the same time.
Absolutely. Well, this week we're talking about a Hall of Famer in wrestling.
Okay.
This is big news. She's a Hall of Famer. Her name is Lita.
And remember, I have no background as to who Lita is.
Oh, here we go. Okay, so
it's a part of the fun, folks.
Yes. Okay, before we go into who Lita is, you've at least heard of the Hardy Boys, right? Matt and Jeff Hardy?
Yes.
Okay.
She said with hesitation in her voice, but yes, I think.
Okay.
I couldn't pick them out of a lineup. But I have heard of them.
Yeah. So, Matt Hardy is still wrestling. He wrestles for AEW. Jeff Hardy was until some legal stuff happened. Anyway, we have a friend whose favorite wrestler is Jeff Hardy.
Yes, we do.
So, that's your... Yeah.
Anyway. Clue into the universe of the Hardy Boys. Which, to me, is still a... delightful children's mystery series.
I do have to say, it's actually their last name. They are actually the Hardy Boy. Like, they didn't make this up for wrestling. They were born Matt and Jeff Hardy. So, It just happened to work out that they're in a mystery. Anyway, moving on. Lita, the reason I bring up the Hardy Boys is because for much of her career in WWE, they were a team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I want to bring that up. Well,
now, so, when go ahead. Did she come on to the wrestling scene? Oh, he laughs now.
Okay, so she came into wrestling in the early 90s. No, sorry, not the early 90s. The end of the 90s, early 2000s. That's a 10-year difference there. My bad. She actually got inspired to wrestle when she saw Rey Mysterio. No, Rey Mysterio is currently wrestling in WWE with his son.
That was literally what I was gonna like say or comment on. Like, the Rey Mysterio is still wrestling today.
Yeah. We'll go into Rey.
I don't feel like Rey Mysterio just gets trotted out for WrestleMania. Like, he seems to wrestle on a consistent weekly basis.
And he's, okay, I'll go into a brief Mysterio tangent. He used to be Rey Mysterio Jr. Because his uncle was the original Rey Mysterio.
Ha-ha.
And his uncle, when his uncle retired.
Kind of like the dreaded Pirate Roberts from The Princess Bride.
Yes.
They just all have the same name.
Oh, I mean, because in Mexico, which is where, like, his uncle wrestled, your character was your character. Right? It wasn't given, it wasn't owned by the company, it was owned by you, and he came up with Rey Mysterio. Now, who we know of as Rey Mysterio started wrestling at 16. Mm-hmm. That's why he has such a long career. The dude is probably early 50s, and he's got like a 40-year career, because he started so young. His uncle gifted him the name Rey Mysterio. So, as respect, he used Rey Mysterio Jr. for a long time until he dropped the Jr. and now he's Rey Mysterio and moving on. He's a legend. But she was inspired to wrestle when she saw him. And I don't remember exactly where she's from. I want to say she's from California. She moved away from the U.S. to live in Mexico to learn to wrestle.
Wow, that's devotion.
Because she liked that style. And she did it kind of on a whim. She was like, I'm not married, I don't have kids, I have no ties to nothing, I'm going. And that's where she started wrestling, in Mexico. And she wrestled in a lot of the companies there, a lot of the underground companies there. Soon found herself in ECW. ECW, at this point, it was already bought out by WWE, I believe, but it was a Philly-based company, run by Paul Heyman. You know who Paul Heyman is. He used,
yes,
yeah, he ran ECW. And when finances were good, WWE bought them out, and now they're owned by WWE because WWE owns everything. So when she finally got to WWE, originally she was just a valet. Basically, a valet is the woman who stands next to the wrestler. She's not necessarily a she's not necessarily a manager. She really doesn't have a speaking role most of the time. She used to be partnered with another wrestler named Ese Rios. Okay? And I think they partnered in Mexico first, and they both came to WWE.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where she got her like iconic like red hair. And because that's not her natural hair color, and just her kind of her iconic look. But something changed, okay? And basically, what changed is they started, and I don't know who's kind of doing this was, she started getting involved in the match. She wasn't just there to look good, she started like helping Ese Rios win the matches, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they found out that she's really good in the ring. Like, she was doing, like, high-flying stuff for that people, because she likes the high-flying style.
Well, and again, with the training that she has, I don't feel like that should come as a surprise, but maybe.
No, well, it probably came to a surprise in WWE, because remember, Vince McMahon keeps his eyes closed to things he doesn't like. Is the way I see it. If you don't fit a mold that he has in his mind, you're not going to get used. So she wasn't being used. So I want to say it was like her and SABL's going, let's showcase her. So they decided to showcase her. And I don't know when the split happened between SABL's, but eventually they split. And she ends up teaming with the Hardy Boys. And they become one of my favorite teams of all time called Team Extreme.
Ooh, fun name, by the way.
Well, it was Team Extreme because you had Lita, who was not afraid to get into the business, to get on the top rope and literally fly halfway across the ring, because she was very, like, you had Jeff Hardy, who was climbing 30-foot ladders and jumping off. They were just doing extreme stuff that, like, WWE fans didn't know about, but ECW's been doing forever. Mm-hmm. Right? So they start partnering up. And I think that happened because wrestling at this time was very much like, hey, we're in this city. We need to get to this city. How do I get there?
Yeah.
Because WWE doesn't pay for travel unless mm-hmm. you're John Cena and, you know, those dudes who they'll literally fly you in Vince's private jet. The average dude, he's not getting that privilege. So she just kind of ended up in the same car with them mm-hmm. because she needed a ride and they were like, get in, let's go, you know, whatever. So they became a team. And they became a huge team to the point where at one point in time, she was the women's champion and they were tag team champions. So they had, like, this trifecta of amazingness. And if they would have had a triple threat title in WWE, which is where there's three partners instead of a tag team, they would have had it. Which now, AEW is having that. They're having, like, a triple threat title. I don't know what it's called. I forget. But, yeah. So, another thing that was unique about Lita in her time in wrestling, and I'm not, I say her time, she's still in wrestling. She's one of the trainers in WWE.
Wow, that's really cool.
So,
good for her.
You know, she's not done.
And you said she's a Hall of Famer, right?
I was so excited when she got into the Hall of Fame.
I'm sorry, I don't know if I distracted you from your...
No. Interrupt all you want. I'm going to talk forever and always, but yeah, she is a Hall of Famer. Which, at this point, Matt and Jeff are not.
Really?
Yeah, they are not. Well,
again, probably with Jeff's legal troubles, aforementioned before.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know why they're not, except for Matt Hardy working for AEW. They're not going to put him in the Hall of Fame unless he's in WWE. Anyway, so they started working together. They became a team. One of the things, and this is where I was going with this, one of the things that is insanely different about Lita, mm-hmm. at this time, women's wrestling was literally bra and panty matches.
And we're talking late 90s, early 2000s.
Yes.
When she's coming onto the scene.
When she's in her most popular, I hate to say prime, because I think she could still get in that ring and whoop anybody, doesn't matter. When she's in her most popular, this was the age of the blonde panty match.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked a little bit about that throughout the course of this podcast as well.
Yeah. So, she did not partake in the blonde panty matches. I think she was scheduled for certain matches, but what she did was she actually made them wrestling matches. Mm-hmm. Right? So, when you would have... so you would have these ladies, when they would wrestle, they would literally just jump on top of each other and, like, slap each other and then steal the clothes, and that was the end of the match.
Oh my gosh, it sounds so ridiculous. I'm sorry.
It is ridiculous, but this is what people wanted, and this is what the company put out as an edgier product. I say that in quotations because that was literally the quote they used when they, you know, promoted this. But she wrestled. And she wrestled sometimes better than some of the men. And she wasn't afraid of getting hurt.
I feel like that, the combination of, hey, I might wrestle better than the men, and hey, I'm not afraid to get hurt, would really help improve her career trajectory in the ring.
I gotta tell you, there was one match that she had, and I always, whenever people, like, mock wrestling, I bring up this match, and I never can remember when it happened, but it was her versus a woman named Trish Stratus. Okay? And they were, they're best friends, but they're rivals.
Yeah.
On the screen, right? Well, there's a spot that she does where Lita's in the ring, Trish is outside the ring. Lita bounces against the ropes and jumps over the other rope, which is super cool, except what happened was, instead of finishing the rotation, her head hit the mat and her feet touched the back of her head.
Oh, no, that
she scorpioned herself.
Yeah, that doesn't suck.
And she still finished the match. Yeah, I'm not going to show you this footage, but I show everyone this footage.
Just my facial expression probably was like, I have a visual in my head.
Now, remember, we're on an audio podcast, so the audience doesn't know what your visual was, but it was disgust. She was like picturing it in her mind going.
It was shock, awe, and horror.
Yes.
But yes, disgust.
Yes.
Anyway, so Lita.
Any questions so far?
I always want to ask this. Does she come from a wrestling family?
No. Like I said, she literally just watched wrestling and was like, that looks fun. Let's go do that.
Does she have, like, is she married? Does she have kids? What's her family situation look like?
We'll get there.
You're like, okay.
That's going to be the second portion. I want to talk about her career first because that's the most important. As far as I know, she doesn't have kids. She never wanted kids. That's okay. It happens. It's not a big deal. She did date many, many people. And I'm not saying this is a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But she dated, like, CM Punk. She's dated Matt Hardy. She's dated Edge. And these are all legitimate, like, real life. These aren't storylines. And she's probably, she's a punk rock person. So she knows a lot of people.
She seems kind of like the type of woman who would not have any qualms about going up to one of these professional wrestlers that she might find interesting and be like, hey, I want to go out on a date with you.
Maybe. Let's say it this way. She's one of those people that if she sets her schedule now, being that she's not wrestling full-time or whatever, to where if she wants to take a day trip to another city, she can. Mm-hmm. And she does it all the time. She's like, yeah, I just got up, drove to three hours away, went on a hike, and came home.
Well, again, like she's working around her existing work schedule, so she's just a person who likes to travel.
Yes. Some of her biggest feuds, one of her biggest feuds is obviously with Trish Stratus. I've already talked about that. So, yeah, we already talked about... She wrestled Trish Stratus a lot. They had a huge... Which is, again, why in real life they're best friends. They've worked together a lot. She also had a feud with a group called... Right to Censor. Mm-hmm. The idea was, okay, we have an edgier product. They made a group. Think about the purity culture. That's what they were. They're like, oh, your pants are too baggy. You're not doing what's proper. Your shirt's not tucked in. And they got on Lita constantly. One, because she was one of those ladies with like, the crop top and the big baggy pants.
To me, it sounds like she could be a backup dancer in a hip-hop video just from that description alone.
Yes, but she's a punk rock person. Like, she likes punk rock music. But yeah, she might like some hip-hop. I don't know. But what they used to always get her on was because she sagged her pants a little bit, you could see her thumb. And they were like, oh, that's, you know, inappropriate and da-da-da. So every time it kind of became a joke of like, how much of her thong can you see? Because it started where it was just a little bit because she's wrestling. And then it turned out to where you could see like the whole thing. It was so funny. It was hilarious. But I don't know. I still find it funny. Anything else we want to know about her career? She's got a wild career. It's super fun. Because she literally, on a whim, was like, yeah, I'm going to learn how to do this. Like,
well, she found something that you said inspired her. She was interested in it. She must have had the physicality to pull it off.
Yeah. You should watch some Lita matches. They are fantastic. Now, along with wrestling, she, like I said, she has a love of music. Mm-hmm. She's also in a band, in a punk rock band. Like, now, along with that, she's also an animal lover.
Aww.
To the point where she has her own, according to the quick Wikipedia search that I did, because I just wanted to see if this was true, she has her own animal, like, rights foundation.
See, that is super cool. I love yeah. that.
I got to open up the thing because it is actually called the Amy Dumas Operation Rescue and Education, or ADORE.
Okay, that's wonderful.
And if you wonder why it's Amy Dumas, it's because that's her real name. This is actually a picture of her at her Hall of Fame ceremony. I know nobody else could hear this but you, but that's okay.
You mean no one else
could see it? Nobody else could see it. Y'all could hear it. Y'all can't see it. But if you haven't seen her, just watch her speech at when she got inducted to the Hall of Fame. It was awesome. Yeah, I mean, she's had one of these careers where you're like, this is awesome. This is super cool. So, yeah, definitely super cool. Now, one of the storylines we have to talk about, and we're going to talk about it briefly, is when real life became a storyline.
Ooh, very intriguing way to put it. Tell us more.
Okay, how do I put this? So, at the time that she was in the group Team Extreme, her and Matt Hardy were dating. Like, legit, real life dating. Mm-hmm. Matt Hardy was injured. I don't remember where Jeff was at the time. I think he was stepping away from wrestling for a period of time. I don't exactly remember. Somehow, she went from having a ride partner. Like I said, they kind of partnered together to get from one city to the next to really not having anyone. She started hanging out with Edge. Okay? Mm-hmm. They end up in a couple without breaking up with Matt.
Oh, does Matt know about the couple?
Oh, he finds out.
Ooh, that's awkward.
And I don't want to talk about this too much because it's personal. But yes, that happens. WWE finds out about it and makes it a storyline.
Of course they did. They just wanted to capitalize on the drama.
I've heard some people say that it was Matt's idea. I've heard some people say that it wasn't. I don't really know. But they did this whole storyline where Matt comes back and Lita and Edge are a couple, and basically Matt starts insulting Edge and they have a match. They have multiple matches. And you could see that these matches, they don't look like they're performance-based. Mm-hmm. There's probably some real emotion there. But I can say this. None of these three are together no more. That's okay. That's fine.
I'm like, in my head, I'm like, it's anymore!
Yeah. Matt Hardy is married. Has like 5 kids. Dude's got a whole hockey team at this point. No, you need like 9 kids. But he's close. He's getting there. Edge is married to Beth Phoenix, who's also a Hall of Fame wrestler, and so is Edge. He's Hall of Fame as well. And Lita's off doing her thing. They all still, based on interviews that I've seen, they all still have respect for one another. They all still care for one another. They don't have any animosity anymore. They've worked it out. To the point where I think Matt and Lita have worked together since.
Nice.
So I thought that, I don't know how true that is, but yeah. I had to bring that up because it was one of those things that, did WWE go too far by making this a storyline? That's kind of up for debate. I almost say yes, because it wasn't something that was, from my understanding, they didn't sign off and say yes, we're okay with this being a storyline. It was just made into a storyline.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what started off Edge's the rated R superstar era, because mm-hmm. he was a heel, and him and Lita were asked to do some ridiculous things. Anyway, so that's her career. Any questions so far? And again, this is a rough sketch of her career.
No, I feel like you're doing a great job. Keep it rolling.
Wow. Okay. Honestly, like, that's... So, I'll say this. When I was a kid, like I said, Team Extreme was my favorite team. To the point where that WWE was putting out cassettes, video cassettes of like biographies of wrestlers. I had the Lita biography. I had the Hardy's biography. When I used to collect wrestling action figures, I had 3 different leaders. I had multiple, because they would do like different action figures wearing different outfits,
you
right?
Were
like
such a nerd. I love.
I was a huge nerd.
Was a huge nerd.
Yeah, I was, and I is.
Yeah, there you go. You gotta own up to it. Yeah.
So, to the point where, I'll say this. She stepped away from wrestling full time 2006-2007. She still did some underground stuff and did appearances, mm-hmm. but she wasn't on TV every week. So when Raw's 1000th episode aired, this is, I don't even remember when this was, but I was hanging out with Travis.
Mm-hmm.
So by college time, I enjoyed the episode. But I jumped out of my seat when she made an appearance. So excited.
I can picture this happening.
And she made an appearance for 45 seconds. She was out there, did a moonsault, and left. That was it. For those who don't know, like my wife,
yes.
A moonsault is when your opponent is laying on the ground next to one of the turnbuckles, so next to one of the corners. You get on the corner and you backflip onto them. That's it. That's all she did. And I was like more happy for that than anything else they tried to do. Because I hadn't seen her do that in a long time. And she, in my opinion, has one of the best moonsaults I've ever seen.
And now I learned a new word today.
Yeah. Her Kavana is super cool too.
I don't know what that is either.
I know. I was waiting for that. So that's where she's on the turnbuckle. Her opponent is standing up facing her. She jumps onto your shoulders, twists her legs around your neck, and spins you around till you fall.
That sounds so dangerous.
Oh, it is super fun. It's done in a way where no one gets hurt, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But she knows how to do it. Anyway, yeah, so that's the life of and career of Amy Dumas, or Lita. And like I said, far as I know, she's still in wrestling. She's training. I believe her band is still together. Don't know if that's 100% true. She's just living her best life.
Do you know what wrestler we'll be looking at next week?
Okay. Because we're still doing Women of Wrestling.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to double check. You know what? Since we can't talk about Lita without talking about Trish, we'll talk about Trish Stratus next.
Oh, wonderful.
So, there you go. We're talking about Trish Stratus. We're going literally from Mexico, which is where Lita was trained. We're going to Canada. Sorry, I can't even finish that. But that's where Trish Stratus is from. Don't know if that's where she trained, but that's where she's from.
We're getting some stamps in our passport today.
Yeah, I kind of wish we would have kept track because we've been to, like, Connecticut with Stephanie McMahon. Who do we talk about after that?
Miss Elizabeth.
Miss Elizabeth. She's from Florida, I think. So that's Florida. And then California and Mexico. Canada. I literally almost said Canada. Sorry, guys.
He has trouble with that word.
Yeah, I've only ever seen that word spelled out. Yeah. I mean, like I said, she was one of those wrestlers that I used to just... I loved watching her work. But anyway. So, next week, Trish Stratus. It's going to be awesome. And then... Doing what? 6, 7?
Let's see. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It'll be 7, 8.
7, 8. Okay, 7, 8.
Miss Jessica can count to 10. Woo!
I mean, can you? You got to use your fingers.
You know what?
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and pray. Excuse me. I'm going to go ahead and pray, and then we'll end this episode. If you guys are liking this, feel free to like, share, subscribe, get it out there. Let me know what else you want me to talk about. And here, I'll even open it up this way. If you want something different when it comes to wrestling, let me know. If there's something you don't like, let me know. I'm not going to guarantee it's going to change, but hey, if it's a good enough suggestion, we'll talk it over.
We do like to take your feedback into account.
Yes. So let me go ahead and pray, and then we'll kind of go from there. Father God, we thank you for this week. We thank you for this podcast and everyone who listens to it. We ask that you would just bless this week, bless this time. I know there's a lot going on. So I pray that you would be with us. Help be our comfort. Help be our strength. I don't know how to speak today.
Yes, you do.
So we ask that you would just strengthen us, be with us, bless us so that we can bless others. And we ask all this in your name. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you guys so much. Have a great week. And we'll be back next week with more Beautiful Feet and Wrestling with Faith. Have a great week, guys. Thank you for listening to the Beautiful Feet Podcast, a partnership of BeautifulFeetEntertainment.com. Please feel free to follow us on social media at Beautiful Feet Entertainment. Please visit BeautifulFeetEntertainment.com and do not forget to like, share, and subscribe.